As president of the International Fund for Agricultural Development, Dr. Kanayo Yawanzi brings to his role almost four decades' experience of reducing poverty through agricultural, rural development and research. It is time to stop focusing on GDP figures and instead focus on people, he argued in a letter to the leaders of the African Union. The majority of our people are engaged in agriculture, and the neglect of that sector must stop if we really want to realise the healthy, peaceful and food-secure Africa that we know we can be. It is not a dream, it is a responsibility. Today, Dr. Yawanzi receives an honorary doctorate from the University of Warwick. Dr. Yawanzi, how do you think we should tackle the problems that face the world today with your in mind of your particular area of specialty?
Well, thanks for that, because when you say the problems of the world. So, well, let's narrow it down to my current professional business, food security and rural development. I think essentially one will begin by saying you have to identify a problem. You have to identify where the problem is for you to solve it. And so when you look at the problems of poverty, hunger, all over in the world, you're looking at the situation in developing countries. And when you look at developing countries in particular, and we talk about the inequalities between developed and developing countries, and you look at poverty and hunger, is again a difference between livelihoods in urban and rural areas in developing countries. So if we are serious about addressing the issues of poverty and hunger, we should be looking at those rural areas where these are problems, where this is a problem. Why do I say that? It is well known in development circles that 75% of the poor live in developing countries globally. It's also known that in developing countries, the poor live in rural areas, and this is anything from 60 to 80%, depending on the country, whether it's Africa or region, Africa, South Asia, or Latin America. So I think the first thing we have to accept is that if we're actually going to eliminate or at least achieve significant reduction in hunger and poverty, we must focus our efforts in the rural areas of developing countries, particularly in Africa and South Asia. That, I think, is the first major step. As I said, it's only through a recognition of where a problem is. And to do that, it's a question of repositioning ourselves where we invest in projects and programs that create opportunities for rural populations. It means investing in people. It means also investing in infrastructure in these areas. It means investing in social services. But it all has to be people-centered. At IFAD, we believe that to achieve sustainable development, we have to first and foremost invest in rural transformation. Why do I say rural transformation? The whole issue of migration from rural areas to urban areas is basically due to the inequalities. And for us, inequality between the rich and the poor is the same as inequality between rural and urban areas. So if we are serious about reducing poverty and hunger to the point where these are no longer a stigma to society, our political leaders in the developing countries have to recognize and make this a priority investment. Having spoken on these broad outlines, we should now ask ourselves, how is it that the population of the poor or the population of the rural areas that actually are engaged in one major activity, which is agriculture, and produce the majority of what is consumed, domestic consumption, in these countries are still poor? There is a paradox that those who produce the food that feeds the majority of the population in the developing world who live in rural areas are themselves poor. So there's something wrong here. And this is where IFAD believes that if we are serious about really addressing the issue of poverty and hunger, we must invest in agricultural systems, all along the value chain. We must create economic opportunities for people so that it's not only that they produce more, but they produce enough to feed themselves as well as to sell. For them to be able to sell, they have to have viable markets. And viable markets is not just building structures in marketplaces. They must have transportation. They must have good roads. They must have storage facilities. They must have abilities. They must have infrastructure for irrigation and so on and so forth. So it's a whole, what people used to describe as integrated development, rural development. Today we know what it is. Linking them to markets, linking them to financial services so that they can have access to capital, linking them also to ability to dialogue with, you know, the private sector so they can have an outlet and so on. And this is what IFAD does, so that we're investing in rural people through building their capacities, creating opportunities, because basically they are looking for economic opportunities. You call them looking for possibilities of increasing their economic well-being as well as social well-being.
And many of the aspects you just laid out, an INGO such as IFAD will be heavily involved with. But also there's another side to that, and that is the governments of the countries in which there is rural poverty. And recently you wrote to the leaders of the African Union. And I was wondering, going from what you've just been saying, what would you like to see? And of course, it's a very complex situation with many different types of government, many different types of community. What do you feel that sort of the leaders of the in the African Union countries, what is their what is their task in this?
Well, I'm glad you asked this question, because oftentimes when I tend to respond to the first question, I see that the whole issue of development and agriculture is not just one sector. It's a multifaceted sector, and there are many, many aspects of it. And I would have easily, you know, said what I said was the answer, but that was only part of the answer, because you just introduced a question which actually addresses another major aspect of the problem, which is government policies, which is political leadership. And if you had seen the letter you referred to that I wrote last year, June 2014, to the leaders of the African Union, it is not enough to say we are going to put more emphasis and make agriculture a priority in our policy. It is not enough to make policies and they remain just policies on paper. It's whether these policies are implemented, whether they're implementable, and whether they're actually implemented. I think our leaders have to, first of all, not only make agriculture and rural development a national policy, a priority national policy, but they have to put in place actually structures that ensure that these policies are consistent and that they address the issues that affect the lives of people. These policies must be people-centered. You understand what I mean? So that if we say we're going to make agriculture, let's take the case of the decision that was made by the heads of state in Maputo in 2003. Which called, they at least they made this declaration and accepted that all countries in the in the continent would contribute 10% of the annual budget to agriculture. There are less than 10 countries that have been able to achieve the 10% level. And they, funny enough, they're not even the big countries, most of them. You know, you have Tanzania, you have Ethiopia, you have Ghana, you have Rwanda, you have Senegal, that have been able to achieve a 10% allocation. But why? This is a policy that they all signed on to in 2003, over 10 years ago. So it is one thing to have a policy, or it's one thing to have conferences and declarations and to make promises. It's another thing to apply them to. And so this is, I think, the policy dimension is crucial. We have to have the right policies. We have to have the right infrastructure and social, both political and social infrastructure, to ensure that these policies are made. It is not enough to say farmers should increase production and productivity and production in order to feed the nation, if after increasing production, prices fall because of overproduction. It is not enough for a farmer to produce an additional 1 ton of rice on his 1 acre farm and yet is unable to sell it or unable to store it and negotiate good prices 2 weeks later when the prices go up. So the policies must address not only the social dimensions of the issues, but also the political dimensions of the issues by investing in agriculture. And they have to make it a priority so that also institutions of the poor, for the poor, exists that gives them a voice in the policy dimension. That means organizing the communities of farmers such that they have their own institutional governance structures, like cooperatives or associations, where they can then be able to negotiate prices with other sectors of society or the private sector, for example, who are interested also in partnering with small producers. So there are these issues. And I think, having said that, actually, I think there are some countries where we can learn a few things and ask ourselves, how is it that they have been successful in addressing these? Good examples are very clear. Ethiopia, Rwanda, Ghana. And one sees that it takes one major factor, which I believe is a priority of priorities, leadership, political leadership. And you can see in these countries that I've mentioned, you've had leadership that has been consistent in terms of addressing the issues of rural development and agriculture as central to that issue.
And thinking about leadership, and in more particular, the people with whom you have graduated today when you received your honorary doctorate, they are, of course, are part of the leadership of tomorrow, the next generation. Mm-hmm. The world is becoming increasingly smaller with improvements in information and communications technology. We feel more connected now to the people around the world than we probably ever have. What would you say to those young people today graduating here from the University of Warwick? Is this part of their responsibility as well to address these issues, and what can they do to help address many of the problems which you have laid out?
I am a firm believer that tomorrow it belongs to the generation of today, the young generation of today. The future is in their hands, as I said in my response. And what they do today will actually determine what happens tomorrow. The opportunities that they have today compared to what we had 35 to 50 years ago is tremendous. You just said what? Communication.
Yeah.
The power of IT, the power of the media, and the new technologies that exist, whether they're in the social sciences and the biological sciences or the physical sciences. And they must challenge themselves. It is not enough for them to ask the question of my generation, what is your legacy? I think they should be asking themselves, what legacy are we going to leave behind? And so they have 25 years to be able to do that. I look at it as a 20 to 25 year generation interval. When I speak with youth, particularly in the developing world, and I tell them that they have to go into agriculture, they say, well, agriculture is not attractive. Well, it's a mindset. If you look at agriculture as central to the food system, and if you look at the food industry as an industry, then you see the opportunities that exist. It is not only just planting the crop or growing the crop or milking a cow or livestock, producing livestock. It's what you do after primary production, the value addition. The opportunities to go into markets, into agro-industry, or in fact market information, or packaging, and marketing the produce. So they can actually go into agro-business throughout the value chain, and there are tremendous opportunities there for them to grow a business. And when I go back to what I said before, seeing agriculture and smallholder agriculture, particularly the clients' population that we work with, as entrepreneurs, small entrepreneurs that are engaged in business. When people say smallholder agriculture is not viable, I said, no, that's not true. It's a failed business. It's a failed business because it has not been optimized, because its potential has not been optimized. Now, we must ask ourselves, why is the potential not optimized? Why is it underperforming? And then look at the bottlenecks there. And I just mentioned them, you know, and address those bottlenecks. I mean, every business person wants to make profit. And this is where I argue with those who say, well, the private sector is only there to exploit. No, it's not. That's not true. The private sector, the small producer, and the public sector, government, is there to make profit. Otherwise, they will not be in the business that they're making. Government wants to make profits. And the way they make the best profit is to ensure that the private sector is successful, because that's where the tax returns come from.
Yeah.
You see? So it's a question of scale. The private sector wants to make profit. It's a question of scale. And if you link them in the right kind of partnerships through public-private producer partnerships, as we call them in IFA, the four Ps, the opportunity is there for a win-win, a multiple win of all partners is huge. And this is where, if you look at successful businesses, it's through partnership. The world is today so small that we're so interconnected that no one can, you know, work in isolation of the others. It's an exciting experience, because from our work at IFAD, and because we travel globally across regions, and whether it's in Latin America, Asia, or North Africa, or Sub-Saharan Africa, it's the same thing. All these small businesses or small farmers and agro-businesses are looking for the same thing. They're looking for economic opportunities. They're not just waiting for handouts. Mm. And then many of them feel it's an insult to their dignity that people think that they're waiting for government handout. No, they want economic opportunities. They want to be able to make their own money. They want the best for their children, like you and I want for our children. Mm. They want them to go to the best schools. They want a roof on over their head, and so on and so forth. And you can see incredible transformation when they take ownership for the transformative processes that are taking place, no matter how small it is.
Well, thank you so much for sharing your time with us today and your thoughts on the situation as you see it. And many congratulations again on your degree today from the University of Warwick.
Thank you very much. I feel honoured, actually, to be a new graduate, or a new graduate, as I think, of Warwick.
We're very happy to have you as one.
Thank you.
Thank you.